Is your child struggling with a specific subject or need help with homework? Are they asking questions that you're not sure you can fully answer? IXL Learning is an online learning program for kids. It covers math, language arts, science, and social studies. IXL is designed. This program will improve your kids' grades. Studies done in almost every state in the country, the kids who had IXL are consistently doing better. Powered by advanced algorithms, IXL gives the right help to each kid no matter the age or personality. And it doesn't have to eat up all your time. One subscription gets you everything for all the kids in your home, pre-K to 12th grade. So don't miss out. 1 in 4 students in the U.S. are learning with IXL. IXL is used in 95 of the top 100 school districts in the U.S. Make an impact on your child's learning. Get IXL now. And listeners can get an exclusive 20% off IXL membership when they sign up today at IXL.com/audio. Visit IXL.com/audio to get the most effective learning program out there at the best price.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Knowing how to speak and understand a new language can be an invaluable tool when traveling, meeting new friends, or just even to master a new skill. But it's not always simple when you're bogged down by textbooks and structure classes. That's why so many people trust Rosetta Stone. Rosetta Stone is the most trusted language learning program, available on desktop or as an app. It truly immerses you in the language you want to learn, like Spanish, French, Italian, Chinese, and more. You won't just be studying English translations. The Rosetta Stone intuitive process helps you pick up a language naturally, first with words, then phrases, then sentences. Don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. For a very limited time, listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/rs10. That's 50% off unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/rs10 today.
Welcome back to Comic Book Nation's Quick Save. We are the only show that does it all for geek culture, and in Quick Save, we do it all for gaming culture. I'm Kofi Outlaw. This is my co-host, Matthew Aguilar, and we are here today to break down and recap Halo Season 2, Episode 8, which is conveniently titled Halo. Matt, thank you for joining me. It's been a great season doing this with you, buddy. And would you like to tell the people who they can stick around and hear from at the end of the show? Because every week we've also been bringing you the cast and crew of Halo Season 2. And Matt sat down this week with...
showrunner. We're talking, look, who better to have to talk the finale than showrunner David Weiner, who stepped in for Season 2 and has, I think, to both of us would agree, has done wonders for Season 2 of the series. So we get to break down all the big spoilers that we're about to get into. So I hope you enjoy that conversation.
Okay, so stick around for the end of this show. We are going to be knocking out a cool about 20 minutes of Halo recap. Then we're going to talk with David Weiner, and then be sure to stick around for all of that. Like I said, Matt, it's been a great season. At this point, I think I'll start out by just saying I think we can... we both can agree that in our minds we'd like to just package up Season 2 of Halo as like the formative season. Let's just call it Season 1 and forget about that other thing and just go with that, right? Much better kind of origin story. And I think we arrived exactly where you and I thought we were going to be headed and hoped we were headed, which was seeing how Master Chief gets to Halo and essentially takes on the events of the game, but understanding who this hero is inside the armor, where he comes from. You know, this show has even injected that there's something special about him that makes him, besides being a Spartan, uniquely heroic and suited for this mission. And understand that, like, him being alone with his AI, Cortana, what that's cost him. And we've seen this season, in this finale episode, whittle down this big cast that we started with, who we were all getting in kind of invested with, but making that loss feel felt, in my opinion, and be like, oh man, and making you understand, like, by the time Master Chief gets to Halo, how how much he's lost and how alone he is in this whole thing. And I think they did a wonderful job of doing that down to the last image of him in the helmet, which I know probably made you feel kind of confused inside, Matt, but last image of a cracked helmet, you know, seeing his face through and all the metaphor of that, right? Like what that means. And so I thought, like you said, it was pretty masterfully done. We're going to get into specifics, but this episode also, like we predicted, introduced the expanded lore of Halo beyond just the Covenant. We got the Flood. We got the first image, or the first, I always forget the little guy's name, but the first real evidence of the Forerunners, their technology, and the Sentries, and this new threat that Chief will have to face now that he's on Halo Ring. And I thought that personally, the Flood stuff was really well done, like a freaky zombie movie that I did not expect them to go this far into in the finale. When it started that way, I was just like, oh, we going in. And I was locked in, but it adds an element to the show that I think was sorely needed, and real fear and real stakes on that front beyond the Covenant. So I thought it did a good job. Not perfect, but we have nitpicks. We'll get into that. But Matt, first, I want to hear your take.
Well, I agree with you. And when we talked to Joseph Borgen, you know, one of the things he teased was like that this one really turned things on its head and like set up that new threat. Right. And people who were enemies now find themselves as allies moving forward. You know, if we get a season three, like we have the, you know, the adversary set up, at least, you know, planet wide outside of just the Halo. I mean, we have everything that's going on there, but then we also have, you know, this threat and the Flood. And I was surprised too. I thought we would get like, you know, the first appearance and then maybe like a tease or, you know, one battle kind of thing. And then, hey, that's like the big thing for the next season. But like this whole episode, I mean, from the very beginning, this episode is like Flood all in. We established them early. We get some gruesome. I mean, like it's the twitching that bothers me most. It's always been that way. I actually bring this up in the interview of the fact that, like, you know, Silent Hill ruined me forever with twitching nurses and all this other stuff. Like, that stuff bothers me. And they did a very good job here of just grossing me out enough and making it disturbing. And I thought that was so well done. And, you know, we do bring in, and we'll get to some of our, you know, nitpicks, but I was happy to see that, like, Soren is kind of like, we bring him back into the fold in a major way, and we touch on their story, and we kind of at least bring them back into the central group. That story was starting to feel like kind of a drift into its own thing. At least now we're like, okay, the group's back together. I'm gonna have, you know, divisiveness on like how that was executed, but as far as just like having him back in the group and a major part of the story again, I was happy with that. And like, man, I mean, we get to that final battle, right? And that was, man, I was pumped. I was just that final, you know, just one-on-one, you know, Arbiter Chief, that thing knocked me out. I was happy. So yeah, I think it did a lot of stuff really well. It sets up a bunch of stuff for a possible season three. I personally hope that we get to see that, because like the stuff that is on the table for that is just like, it will suck if we don't ever get to see any of that realized. But I thought it did a good job.
Yeah, I mean, it is commendable to say, like, in the era where The Last of Us is getting all this hype for, you know, the cordyceps and all of that, like, Halo doing the Flood was supremely freaky in this episode. Like you said, it was a thing where, like, people are normal, and then all of a sudden they just stop, and then, like, you know, they're infected because it's a spore, and, you know, they start twitching, and just that scene with Miranda and Halsey when they're having, like, and Halsey's so full of life, and she's so excited, but like so twisted, like, I don't think you understand anything. And then she just stops talking, and you're like, oh no. And like, yeah, it did a good job with that. And like you said, it turned everything on its head. Like, everybody thought might be an antagonist, like Parangoski and all that. It, you know, she gets got, Halsey gets got, like Lara gets got, like Not a good episode for women in this one. Kai blows herself up. Not the best for the ladies in this of Halo in this one. But one thing I will just kind of nitpick and disagree about is I liked the fight between Chief and Arbiter because we had to get there. Arbiter killed Varric, and we had to get some payback for that. And I get that. But it exemplified exactly what I don't want to see too much of in this Halo show, which is essentially two CGI characters slugging it out with voiceover, right? Which I dug in this moment because it was such a well-earned fight, but even just seeing it well-executed still made me be like, yeah, I don't prefer this to another part of the episode, which is where I think they should remember and use Master Chief wisely going forward is Master Chief being this kind of plot armor, because he is plot armor. He's walking plot armor. He literally has armor, an impenetrable helmet, except for when it's cracked. But in this show, even the superpower of basically being Domino, right? Like, I always come out lucky, and I always make sure the outcome, I'm a weapon of war that's always going to win. And so I like in the ship where you get it from the perspective of the normal kind of, or just the soldiers that don't have that plot armor, even Kai, Perez, like, and the brutality of seeing what they went through. And kind of, you know, this, I love that this show and the action scenes did not shy away from brutality. Like, real soldiers, you know, get their bits blown out and, like, are still trying to fight. Like, Perez, you see her bleeding out. Like, it's pretty brutal. And, you know, them having that horror and the panic and us on the edge of our seats until Master Chief comes in. And you don't even need to see it, but you just see him in a fog and he's just wiping people out. And him being that thing that when he arrives, everybody knows, like, they're safe and they're going to be protected because he's just going to kick ass and take names. Like, that's the way I like this hero being used, right? Like, Superman is a plot armor hero, but how he's used is what's important. You're not so much concerned about Superman. You're concerned about everything around him. You're concerned about Metropolis, his friends, you know, heroes that don't have that invulnerability. And will he be there in time to save them? That's the kind of thing you need to remember about Master Chief until he faces something that's, like, legitimately more threatening than him. But with the Flood and stuff, that's the kind of beauty of that enemy. It's like he's not just trying to blast them away. He's got to save the people he needs to save. So I thought that was my preferred way, and I loved that scene because I thought he was really going to leave them. And then when he turned around and came and saved them in the way that, like, that's the moment where I was just like, oh. Like, when he's walking through the fog and the armor, and, like, it took all season to get here. Yeah. But when it happens, you just realize, like, yeah, that's the hero that, like, now we've built up. But he's a hero because of how he looks in other people's eyes, which was, to its credit, a major subplot of this season, right? The image of Master Chief. What does it mean? Who is he really? And there was a whole meta level to that I thought was really well done about, yeah, like, you know, people just use this image of this guy in the armor and they tell you it's, like, heroics. But what does that, like, actually mean to the person doing the shooting? So I thought that was well done. But the Arbiter fight, it did remind me of the one thing I don't want to see too much of, because it was ballsy to do that in daylight, by the way, and render that all in daylight outside when you could have just catch him inside and have done that in a darker room. And to their credit. It was brutal, though. Like, it again, they did not shy away. Those two beat the living crap out of each other.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress-them-on-the-third-date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify has got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Yeah, and, I agree with you. I agree with you actually across the board. Like, I think that's one of the things. I'll be interested to see how people react to that, because I know, like, we've talked about it on the main show where, like, sometimes, you know, there's a group of fans that, like, only want to see that. Like, they only want to see that type of scene where it's just, like, you know, a big fight or that kind of thing. Like, they feel like that's the spot, right? And I agree with you. I think it's most effective when Chief or any Spartan, really, because I think all the Kai stuff works really well too when she's with the group, like when she's with the other troopers and she's the one that's kind of having to lead them in the mix of that. I think that's when the Spartan is used best, because you have something, the stakes feel real, and you have these other people that kind of look at them in a different way, and so it all works really well and makes them stand out. But I also think, like, they executed that. I felt like those punches, I felt, oh, yeah. And I was just like, dang, when he starts just clubbing him, like, oh my God. And then I was like, oh snap. They actually kept, you know, they kept going. Like, I thought that was a well-earned moment. I will be interested to see kind of where we move from there. Let's get into that.
Because the moment he took that sword and killed Arbiter and McKee was still standing there, I was like, dang it. I could already see the Twitter threads unraveling. Like, we lost an Arbiter, but we're keeping her. Like, yeah. I know that's coming. We recording this before we get to see you guys wilding out on Twitter. But, like, yeah, it's I know you're out there. Even future me can already see it, like, through the third eye. I know you guys are wilding about her still being here. And, I mean, to be fair, I'm kind of ambivalent about it, too. I think this character is kind of one of the most problematic things about this series versus, like, the games, is this one character and what does she mean to all this. And right. I think we're still this season kind of did the kind of spinning the little used car sign of keeping us distracted with Arbiter stuff and stuff like that to really distract from the fact that there's not a very strong storyline for her in this season. It's just her. It was better when she was in the shadows for the first part of the season and, you know, what's going on with that. But just her trying to earn her place and still survive the Covenant is basically the same story. So it's going to be key to see if we get season three, like, what her being on Halo and her and Chief both being there and already this kind of setup between them, you know, they're both kind of, it's almost like a courtroom drama, right? When they're talking to the little sentry and how the episode's framed in an interesting way about, you know, her account versus Chief's account and what the stakes are of that. So it'll be interesting to see. I hope we don't get another love scene on Halo. I never need to see that again. But the fact that they kept her, but took him was a choice right there. That was a choice.
Yeah, that was a big choice. I don't even mind that they kept her, It was more that he died. I mean, that's such a... Now, granted, there's also a part of me that doesn't really believe he's dead. It's one of those things that, you know, that is such a big character that unless they either have some sort of plan for someone else to step into that place and kind of pick up the baton, essentially, or there's some way where, like, he's coming back or something. I just feel like that story's not done yet. So while it hit me hard because I did not expect that to happen, I would be supremely surprised if we don't see him again. Just a thing, well, right? So when you see the body, like it didn't evaporate in front of you, like they didn't bury him in a big thing, like. You know, I don't know. Until you see that, the rule of comics, right? No one's really in TV. No one's really dead until,
yeah.
Like, you know,
there's multiple ways to do that. Multiple ways to do it, too. Like the Halo, we know, I mean, it foreshadows that it can literally make things spring to life. It can grow things. So it could bring him back easily. There's also the fact that Gar is not the Arbiter in the games. It's a whole other kind of Covenant guy. Who's actually the leader of the fleet and becomes the Arbiter because of the shame of them getting their butts kicked in that space battle that we just saw. So we could easily just have a new Arbiter in the actual silver armor, get crowns and sent to Halo and all that. Or Halo can bring back the one we lost already and know and just kind of spring him back to life. Either way, yeah, I don't believe that story's done either, because I don't think they would have just done this weird kind of sideways Arbiter shout out and then just been the end of it. Also, the Arbiter that we do get has to be kind of interested in peace. That's like the whole arc of that character. He's the last Arbiter. So yeah, so either the one we have comes back with a very different attitude, or there's another one that gets kind of selected. Either way, I agree with you. I don't think we're done with that because it's such a big part of the Halo games.
Yeah, agreed. I think it's safe to say, or at least I won't speak for you, but I feel like it's safe to say that this was a much better season ending episode than season one. And I'm pretty hyped for a season three. I hope we get to see it.
Yeah. I'm still interested in the Soren aspect of it. That's kind of like, I mean, he and Quan obviously now have a duty to kind of warn the universe and protect against the flood. So that's at least something interesting that we can get into. I'm not mad that Lara died. I loved her as a character, but like the dynamic was getting old with her and Soren and the conflicts and parenting and all that. So I'm glad we kind of streamed some of that down. But I'm glad that like we actually brought this Quan stuff to some kind of payoff as well. That was like really interesting to see. You know, the mysticism that we didn't in the midst of all this, we didn't drop that thread about like the mystical lady and what all that was. And that had a really freaky payoff with kind of being
that
like
that scene was nuts.
Yeah.
Cause when I love that they can't move because like the force is keeping them there. But when they all turn their heads as she, like after she makes it through them and they still all are able to turn their heads, like they can't follow her, but they're still like, because she even says, right, I can't hold them for long, and like they all turn in unison. That freaked me the hell out. I was like, okay.
Yeah, no, the well zombie done. Acting, like the zombie creature acting on this was top notch. And I just sincerely hope we get season three, because like this show seems to be doing horror very well. Like that jail scene is pretty nuts when they're just all locked down there in the cages. And you're like, whoa. Like, and that lady starts squeezing through the bars, and you're like, oh, Jesus, like that was pretty freaky stuff. So Halo is doing it's doing action and horror and stuff like that pretty top notch. So like, yeah, I want to keep going with
that. We got Ackerson back in the fold helping out. Like it's, you know, like it's, I'm excited for that group.
Yeah, Quan, Ackerson, and Soren is such a weird combination, but Ackerson and Soren just kind of like Soren, because Soren's always got that like kind of wise cracking, but he might put a bullet in you kind of attitude. And Ackerson's always trying to play mind games and like trying to sneak out of something. So like, yeah, those two kind of going tit for tat with Quan in the middle will be kind of funny to see. So I'm kind of down for that. But all right. Any parting thoughts? I mean, you know, people are taking shots at us on Twitter, things like that, for doing these recaps. I get it. The kind of range of this audience is smaller because of it streaming, and you know, not everybody has access to the wonderful mountain of entertainment that is Paramount Plus. But we're here because, like, yeah, we've legit enjoyed this season, and like, we came into it kind of wary, like, I don't know, bro, here we go. And I think for you and I, this has been like worthwhile appointment TV viewing pretty much across the board this entire season. And this was a great finale that had me on the edge of my seat pretty much the entire time. So I hope that more people kind of catch on to this, or they give it like some run on CBS or Paramount Network or something like that, and just allow more people to just get a quick primer of season one, jump into season two, and be like, yeah, no, this Halo's kind of hitting, like, it's pretty good. Because, yeah. And it made me want to play more Halo games, if nothing else. So there you go.
Yeah, yep. I need a, you know, I need an energy sword, like, stat in here.
We'll talk about it on the live show. We got to get into that, because Janelle Wheeler, they popped off in ways that Janelle Wheeler is going to be loving. People picked up energy swords, double gun needlers.
Like, yes.
Yeah. We even got a pulse rifle, like, popping off.
You know,
like,
when she said that last episode, I laughed to myself, because I was like, I was like, oh, she's going to love this episode.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So shout out to Janelle on our live show. We'll get into it. Yeah. About two guns up with needlers and everything we love from the Halo games just kind of popping off in this episode. So in terms of the game mechanics, like, well done. Well done. All right, let's sit down. Matt got to talk with showrunner David Wiener about the experience of making Halo Season 2, plus I'm sure some interesting things or teases that you guys probably want to hear if you've been following show. So let's go to that interview.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
I am excited to finally get to talk to someone about this.
Hey, I'm your man.
This was a hell of a finale. Kind of stepping back just a little bit, you know, for the season overall, there was so many moving parts you know, story perspective and groups of characters. What was the most, you know, challenging aspect of all having all those pieces on the board and moving them to the right place and all of that coming into season two?
Yeah, there's a lot of pieces. You're right. So I came on for the second season, but everything that happened in the first season had to remain true. So I think one of the challenges and one of actually the I think fun parts for us as a writing staff was, you know, how do we take these 18 major characters and use where they conclude the first season as a launching point, with the ultimate goal of kind of focusing our story more over time. So if you look at the arc of the season in general, there's a compression that happens as we bring everybody kind of back to the together at the end of the finale. It takes a lot of, you know, I think clever and it's like it's a lot of problem solving. Like, how do you make all these divergent perspectives, all these divergent character arcs into something that feels more like a focused singular story about the conflict between humanity and the Covenant threat?
Yeah, it's been, you know, interesting to see. And one of the things I love about the season was that the way everyone was spread across the board, it felt like they could kind of sync up at any given time. Like, there was, you know, it wasn't, everyone wasn't so far away that, you know, next episode, you might not see them cross paths or see one affect the other. It felt, you know, big, but still relatively like unpredictable in that way, because you could really see anybody jump into anyone else's story at any given time. Was that something you wanted to keep up throughout the season as well?
Yeah, I mean, I appreciate you saying that. Like, you know, I think the for as storytellers, it's really important that there's like that we tell a story from a place of causality and not like so it's just and then and then and then. Instead, you want it to be more of a because. And I think where the magic really starts to happen is where because something occurs in one storyline, it has reverberations in another storyline. And creating all those causal connections, like, you know, it's a lot. The great thing about Halo is also what makes it a challenge, which is the scope, the scale. You know, we go to 7 different planets during the course of the series, this season, and you want it all to feel like it's of a piece, rather than having kind of like these divergent, separate shows. That's great to hear that's working.
Well, and especially in the finale, right? You see so many of these things converge into really, you know, two kind of main through lines. And let's, you know, start on the chief side of things, because obviously Pablo's been, you know, killing it this season. It's really been interesting to see Chief's journey and coming into this. You know, last episode, you get the, you know, kind of reunion between not just him and Cortana, but also the armor and all that. But then here's where you get to, like, you get back into the toy box. And in this episode, you get to play with the toys.
Yeah, right? I think what's really important, obviously, our focus this season was like, how do we begin to tell the story of the two different characters that inhabit Master Chief, right? You have Master Chief, the symbol, the soldier, the super soldier. And then on the other side, you have John 117, or even John before he was John 117, who's a kid who's taken and pressed into service, you know, by somewhat dark means. And what does that mean for John the man? So in our season, we actually separate him from his armor. And what that's the goal of that was just to see, like, who is John without that armor? Who is he as a soldier without that armor? Who is he as a leader without that armor? And what does it mean for him to put it back on? Right. We wanted to get to a place where it wasn't just a clean decision that he was putting that armor back on, with his eyes open as to what it meant. And that it's a sacrifice to put that armor back on. It means disappearing into this character that humanity needs. So putting on their armor itself, I think, is a pretty selfless act and a heroic one. As he says to Kai in the, you know, the finale, she says, you know, like basically, I'm paraphrasing, but, you know, you're coming with us and you're going to be Master Chief again. And he says, you know, in so many words, like, it's not that simple. You know, it's not, right. It's not just, I put it on and then I fight. It's when he puts that on, he's putting on the mantle of his responsibility. He's putting on the expectations of all of these people. He's putting on his responsibility to the dead. He's putting on the calamity of Reach. And he's in a position where he can't let people down, you know, not controlling the Halo or contending for control of the Halo. Is the same thing as assigning humanity to Armageddon. And so that's where we wanted to build to and have the armor mean something.
And that's a bold decision, right? For having Chief that, you know, the look, the iconic, you know, armor and helmet and everything. I feel like that's a bold decision to take him out of it, and not even just him, take all the Spartans out of it for a period of time. I mean, that's like, did you know that? I mean, obviously you were paired for, like, you know, some kind of like, well, where's the armor? You know, where's the armor?
Oh,
kind of
totally. That immediate. Totally. I mean, I don't really tune in that much to the, you know, all of like the various schools of thought online, but I'm aware of it. And I understand that, like, people know Master Chief in the armor because that's who's the avatar for your gameplay.
Right.
But there's a Master Chief that exists in the wider lore of Halo that is in and out of his armor, right? In the books and in the, you know, other accompanying comics and so forth. Like, he's not always in that mode, nor should he be, because, you know, it would be a little crazy if he never took it off, right? But that said, I think that it was about saying, okay, well, why do people care so much, right? Like, why do I care? You know, why is that Master Chief to me and this other person isn't necessarily? And I think like that is a great place to be kind of telling story from. That's an exciting place to be. Like, what is that central question? Do we kind of have this meta moment of, we have a symbol, right? That for me is a big part of, like, you know, playing the game over the last 20 years. And okay, well, what does that mean to be a symbol, you know? And so there's even like a moment in the fourth episode where Keyes brings, you know, John up on stage, and you see that even the soldiers that are fighting alongside him, they know the dude's a Spartan, the guy's huge, but yeah, they're like, oh my gosh, like, that's Master Chief? Because they only know Master Chief as the guy with the armor and the helmet. And so we wanted to take that and make it part of the fabric of the story and part of the fabric of the character. And it's amazing. Pablo does such a great job, both in the armor and outside of it. But I think what some people, or I guess what I'd say is, what was remarkable to me to see is like how much that demands from an actor. It means kind of embodying two different personas simultaneously, and they both have to be true from scene to scene. And he's so impressive.
Yeah, I mean, there's several scenes in this particular episode that, to me, and obviously we're going to, this episode of our conversation will debut after the episode has debuted, so we're going to get in the full spoilers. But, you know, one of the things is there are several moments in this episode, you know, the one on the, you know, Covenant ship with Kai, like, there's certain moments that they to me anyway, they don't hit unless you care about the person in the armor and understand why it's important. So when she comes out and say, oh, that's Chief. And then we get to the one-on-one battle with the Arbiter. And I am rooting for John as much as I am rooting for Chief. And I think that's like a huge testament to, you know, the work they did this season on developing.
I appreciate those Matt. People. Thank you. Yeah, you know, I mean, part of like the dogma in making this season that we tried to be really disciplined with was like staying in this subjective perspective of the soldier, and you know, forging that connection of what's it like to be in the midst of the cacophony and the confusion, the loss, all of that stuff. We don't see things our characters don't see. We don't know things they don't know. And so when you have like, you know, you, even though they've got this shield in front of their eyes, I feel like sometimes in the armor, they're as emotive, you know, in a way. I think I'm, as a viewer, kind of projecting my own feelings onto my own empathy, like onto the visor, which is kind of a really cool thing to see. Like, I feel that.
You know, that is, you know, perfect tee up for that battle that we see on the Halo, right? So we're at the Halo, like, we're on it. We're in the thick of it. And obviously, you know, as much as Chief is, you know, iconic, there's a whole, you know, legion of, you know, Arbiter fans as well. And that character is just as, you know, important and kind of beloved in a way. So for that battle, because it's was it always going to be kind of that one-on-one kind of really like impactful showdown? Did that, any plans for that change along the way? Cause we got so much else going on, you know, surrounding that, but that battle is such a huge part of this one.
Yeah. I mean, I think we did entertain it at times, other conclusions, but it felt like it gave the story unity, you know, the confrontation between those two soldiers, right, who both have their own sense of honor, their own code. And I think on some level, they actually really relate to each other, you know, in the sense that they fight for a cause. They've been both conditioned to be these war machines, that it felt right. And plus the Arbiter was kind of stopped from taking John's head a couple times because McKee needed John in order to kind of finish her sense of destiny and her plan for the Halo. And so when they brawl at the end, I think it feels for both of their characters like there's an element of they're not going into that battle in a place of fear. You know, they both kind of want that fight. And I think like that's, yeah, that's like just the fundamentals of what it is to be that kind of warrior and felt right for the story. So, you know, we got awesome stunts, awesome. Shooting that scene was crazy. I mean, you have all these previews, sometimes it's digital, sometimes it's humans, you know, three different stunt performers, a guy on stilts, Victor Ackerblom, who's amazing as the arbiter, but like, you know, you're filming it and half of what you're seeing, you know, you just have to imagine being replaced at some point. That structure is partially built and then you have to realize it afterwards. And we're in Slovenia, you know, praying the weather would cooperate. And yeah, it's epic.
Yeah, we got to get some behind the scenes shots of that in action side by side. That's, you know, it ends in a surprising way too. I did not see that coming. I'm not going to lie.
That was a bold choice too. Yeah, there's so much about Halo that I love and I didn't want to hold anything back. I wanted to put everything that I thought was cool, everything that I responded to playing the games, you know, into the episode. Like, can we do that thing that the game does and which blew me away the first time was, can we go from the action adventure genre and into horror? You know, can we go into kind of the magical and the adventure, the mystical adventure of discovering, you know, the forerunners and what, you know, speculating this is their intentions and what they left behind and what that means for us. All of that's part of the Halo experience. And it's hard to cram it all into 8 episodes, but, you know, we wanted to be bold and do as much as we possibly could.
Well, and yeah, that's a perfect place to touch on the flood because, man, there were a couple moments in here. Like, I'm already got like a heebie-jeebies thing with like, you know, creepy crawlies sometimes and stuff like that. Sure. So like, yeah, like my God, like there was, you know, this first scene where like you really see like them like start moving out of the mouths, like I think I was eating something. Like, I'm good.
Even in the VFX reviews, I would be like, even like the grayscale renderings, I would be like, oh man. And then, you know, you had the sound and it's brutal.
Oh yeah. It's awful. But in the best way, right? Cause it really is this cool juxtaposition between you've got this kind of epic fight happening in space and, you know, there's this, you know, comrades saving comrades and things. And then you have this horror show happening within the labs and the other ship and like people just, you know, doing all kinds. The head tilts always get me. Okay, they've gotten me since Silent Hill. All right, ever since I saw like a twist in Nurse, it's over.
Right. When you can hear like the bones and the viscera. It's,
Choices there too, like held, like you were, you know, mentioning like really wanting to like go for it. And there's Halsey, like having that happen. And where that happens, and you know, there's choices made there too. Like, oh my God, like, you know, like I'm, you know, season the hype for, you know, wanting a season 3 and things was already in place before this. But there are some things here. You're like, okay, I gotta see what the hell happens there.
Yeah, well, from your mouth to God's ears, I think like the great thing about Halo is you think that the stakes can't get any bigger. And you think that the enemy can't get any more lethal or scary. And then suddenly you introduce this whole other character that's, you know, beyond, can't even comprehend of the horrific and massive potential. The reason that the Halo exists is because of this organism, because of this entity. And so it felt like that's where we wanted to get to. We also, you know, remember that we started at the end of season 1 And so, you know, that had to connect to Quan's story, that had to connect to Halsey's story, that had to connect to Miranda's story. And I thought what was great about the way it came together is that for those three women, it all means something different, right? For Quan, it's suddenly all of these visions and this experience she's had since a young person, as a young person, of growing up feeling like she's special and destined for something, feeling like she's failing that destiny. And then for Halsey, it's actually like it's something that charges her curiosity. You know, she wants to know more about this, you know, this entity that was that coexisted with the Forerunners, that she's just starting to understand through this archaeological perspective. And then for Miranda, it's like, for her character, it's her basically answering, you know, her mother, you know, basically this woman that always chose her work over Miranda. And we see that the way that's manifested in Miranda is Miranda's like, you know, I care just as much about that as you. In a way, she has a lot of resentments towards Halsey. And ultimately, she's in a true sense becoming her. And so it felt like, you know, it's always about like just trying to find a way where those plot elements are activating your characters in a way that feels organic and authentic. The creature itself, like, you know, there's a lot of ways to manifest that kind of body horror thing. And you also don't want to, you know, you want to set it up, but we're not done with the flood. Like the flood can actually be scarier and bigger and more horrific than even what we see in the finale here. But I love the idea of, you know, that this whole of Onyx getting subsumed by this enemy they couldn't quite see and having it kind of unfold in a surprising way.
Yeah, there are some definite questions, lots of things happening that, you know, we want to see the answers to. And, you know, the flood is just something else, man. It's cool to see that. I'm, you know, there are also things, I mean, we couldn't even, I know I need to let you go here. So there's all kinds of things covered in this that we couldn't even, you know, get to. Ty, you know, Ackerson's, you know, arc, Soren and all that. I mean, there's so much happening in this episode, but kudos on a great finale. I hope we get to be doing this again for season 3.
Me too. I so much appreciate the time and the interest. And, you know, we're just, I think all of us feel like just really grateful to be, you know, just allowed to work on something that means so much to so many. We never lose sight of that, which is, I think, really important.
Yeah. Well, and I feel like it shows in the final product. So, you know, congrats on all the success. I cannot wait to geek out about this finale with everyone when it hits, and, you know, hope we get to do this again soon.
Me too. Thanks so much, Matt. I appreciate it.
All right. We want to thank David Wiener, Pablo Schreiber, the rest of the cast of Halo Season 2 for joining us here on Comic Book Nation's Quick Save all season long. Matt, thank you, buddy. You stepped up and really went out there and got your PR on and talked with everybody and had great interviews that people are continuing to enjoy over on our Comic Book Nation YouTube page. So thanks for doing that all season, buddy. It was really great, and really great to listen to you kind of chopping it up with everybody.
Yeah, and thank you, by the way, for all the amazing recaps. Those have been handy for me as well. So it's always a great refresher. And if you need, like, if you want to jump into the season or even jump in midway, those recaps have you covered.
Yeah, they're on comicbook.com gaming, our whole Halo recap coverage. And I am, you know, a little sad and bittersweet that the season's over. I am not sad to stop writing those recaps. You know, Halo had to go and get such wonderfully improved writing this season that I was... Oof, my hand was tired from the click-clacks of trying to explain all those scenes away and all the character development and all the larger things that were happening and all the big moments you needed to know from Halo lore. Like, my hands are tired. My hands are really tired. But My mouth is never tired, so we are Comic Book Nation, the only show that does it all for geek culture. You're listening to our quick save segment, but we have an entire nation of shows out there on our feed, including Anime Initiative, our anime-focused show. Matt does the pull list every Wednesday where we talk about the biggest comics and the big publishers, as well as some indie darlings you need to know about. And our regular quick save segment covers all things gaming. And right now, we are also recapping Invincible Season 2, Part 2, in addition to finishing up with Halo. And we got more big TV recap episodes coming as well. Subscribe to our feeds now. And if you're a Marvel head, go to our MCU show, Phase Zero, over on its feed. And for you Pokemon heads, a wild Pokemon has appeared. Our Pokemon-focused podcast has its own feed you should subscribe to as well. All right, me and Matt have much more to do here. Like I said, Comic Book Nation, it's a whole world we got to cover. And we got more to record. But thank you guys, everyone who has joined us for Halo Season 2. Here's hoping we can be back for Halo Season 3. The Flood, the Halo Rings, the all the crazy stuff from Halo lore would be coming our way. And we're pulling for it. Thank you to everybody. See you out there. We are Comic Book Nation. Peace.